Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. The Brain Massage Show is ready to go. Get ready. Your brain is about to get a massage. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. There you go. Now, I appreciate Real Clear Politics polls page because it includes virtually every poll taken and averages all of them out, which is not perfect, but polling never is. Nevertheless, in my view, it seems to me one of the most effective ways of getting a sense of how the field is shaping up. As of November 4, the horse race for the GOP nomination is narrowing down. Looks like Trump continues to hold the lead at 24-8 with Carson breathing on his jowls at 24-4, while he's actually edging out Trump in Iowa, causing Trump to strain his credibility. Meanwhile, Rubio is straining to hold third, about one link behind at 11-8, while Cruz seems to be, well, cruising. I mean, he's not even breathing hard and creeping up on Rubio's nape at 9.6. Then trailing and seeming to fall off his pace, there's Bush at 6.0 and gathering back of Bush's tail are Paul, Kasich, and Fiorina at 3.0 with Huckabee at 2.4 and Christie at 2.2 at their withers. And then there's Jindal and Santorum at 0.8, about three steps behind them, and then basically out of view are Pataki and Graham. To change the metaphor, Trump, who calls himself a counterpuncher, is beginning to swing wildly as Carson is keeping him backing off with effective on-point jabs. Okay, my friends, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
I've studied the debate transcript and watched bits of it. I was in Canada and unable to watch the event in full. But I thought the questions were right on this time. The moderators pretty much stayed out of the way and gave the candidates an opportunity to communicate their agenda for addressing the economic morass, really the bog that has been created by Obamanomics. And from what I read and saw, and from the response I'm seeing from most of the conservative watchers is, Cruz shined the brightest. His answers were the most clear, the most comprehensive, and he was able to bring the immigration issue into the debate by making the very important point that it is an economic issue. Now, folks, tell me you didn't just love it when he responded to the questions about entitlements. The moderator set it up well, I thought, reminding us of how the Democrats attempted to say the conservatives wanted to push Granny over the cliff. Remember that? And asked Cruz what's going to be different this time. And Cruz fired one or two of his famous Cruz missiles during the debate. He said, well, my mom is here, so I don't think we should be pushing any grannies over cliffs, to which he got some appropriate applause. After clarifying his position on this issue, explaining that his plan is to make no changes for seniors, but to gradually raise the retirement age for the younger contributors to Social Security, to slow the growth of benefits and allow them to keep a portion of their taxes in a personal account they can control and also pass it on to their kids. Or in other words, move back to the take responsibility for yourself model. Remember that one? And you know, take responsibility for your own family system instead of the give your money to the government and trust them to take care of you, which is working out so well that most Americans today don't even believe Social Security will be there for them when they need it. And who but the government could take your money on a promise to provide certain benefits and then rob the till so that there's insufficient funds to cover their promises and then call it an entitlement after you've paid for it? It's outrageous. And I'll go one farther. You know what? It's wicked to steal from people. If any private company pulled on the American consumer what the government has pulled on the Americans who have been forced to pay into Social Security, well, they would be sitting in jail singing the blues with Bernie Madoff. Anyway, Cruz went on to point out that while the MSM does not generally present the immigration issue as an economic one, he said he thought they would change their tune if thousands of journalists were coming across the border, driving down their wages and taking their jobs. Because, as a matter of fact, this immigration debacle is having at least as much of a negative impact on wages and jobs as it is purported to provide the benefit of low-wage labor to employers. And then the next highest applause line was this one, quote, "And we should enforce the law. We're tired of being told it's anti-immigration. It's offensive," end quote. Indeed it is, Brother Cruz. Indeed it is. And you know what? The cruise tax plan is very well thought out. Rand's is good, Carson's is okay, and some of the others, but hands down, the cruise plan is the most well thought out of all of them and the most executable. But with the MSM and the rhinos, you know, it's anyone but cruise, please. Look, Trump is beginning to flail. He has started to swing wildly. This business of jumping on Carson's struggles with anger as a kid and his rhetorical attempt to associate Carson's admission to a pathological problem with anger as a youth with a pedophile's pathological sexual attraction to children was, that was hitting below the belt, to continue with the boxing metaphor. This followed up by calling the Iowans stupid for believing Carson's testimony. Well, let's just say that that was stupid. And I've got to say that Carson responded with class. He earned some points with me in this. But I also have to say Carson has, as I expected he would, drawn a shoulder back on the illegal migration issue. And anyone with a discerning ear knows that Trump's recent rant was clearly a play to his audience. It's just, it had the ring of insincerity to me. Sorry. You know what? I just don't have confidence that Trump is a sincere candidate here. I mean, he sincerely wants the presidency, but I don't think that he's a sincere conservative. I don't trust his conservative credentials because, frankly, he doesn't have any that have been tested. And Carson, whom I think is a very honest man and sincere man, likewise is new to the conservative camp. And let's be honest, both of these guys are connecting with conservative voters on two emotional hot-button issues, immigration and political correctness. At some point, however, the voters are going to have to examine the specifics of their respective plans, and sooner, hopefully, than later, they'll find a better way to address the unfairness of the MSM and the political correctness crowd than simply to complain about it. I mean, it's almost beginning to sound like whining to me, and that's not a winning posture. Don't know when it'll happen, but I hope it happens soon that conservative voters begin to realize Cruz is handling the press very well. He's leading the charge on the unfair bias of the MSM and political correctness, and he's charging straight forward with his policies on immigration, and he's doing it by articulating clear-headed policies on the issues. And rather than whine about being treated unfairly, he simply spanks the media for their bad behavior. I think Carson has been paying attention because he's getting better about this. Whining about political correctness is unbecoming a president, unless you're following the Obama model, which we've had enough of that, have we not? But it's unbecoming for a real man president to whine about opposition, but very becoming to stand up to MSM bias and misrepresentation and give them a public spanking for it like Cruz has done. It is unbecoming for a president to use leftist attack dog methods to launch unfair personal attacks as Trump has done. It's one thing to have an interest in whether someone is actually a citizen or whether his past associates were communists or radical terrorists or whether, you know what I mean, and you know who I'm talking about. But it's something else altogether to pick on a man for a self-disclosed period of trouble in his life. You know, that story in Carson's life is actually very touching. And indeed, it is revealing. Most kids who grow up in a single-parent home deal with anger issues, especially boys. And Carson's story is inspiring. And I'll tell you something else. His story is a wonderful testimony to the transforming power of genuine and sincere prayer. And that connects with a lot of us out here, okay? That, it seems, is something Mr. Trump knows very little of. And if I have a choice between these two, I'll take a man who, like Lincoln, knows the value and effectiveness of prayer when he has pressing decisions to make over some guy who thinks he never needed to ask God for forgiveness and has no testimony to any relationship with God that I can tell, except he sits in church from time to time. You know, beyond lip service to respect for a Bible that it seems obvious to me he's never read or rarely reads. So my view is go, Ben, go, but not to the chair behind the desk in the Oval Office, not yet. Sit in front of it for a term or two and solidify your conservative creds. A while back, I raised concerns about Carson's position on the issue of immigration. I brought to your attention that from his book, America the Beautiful, he sounded like a GOP insider aristo with fuzzy talk. It wasn't clear, but it sounded like Carson believed giving a pathway to citizenship to the illegal migrant was the moral thing to do. But then in February this year, he rang the immigration bell with a clear statement, quote, "The American people should not be manipulated into believing that they are heartless simply because they want to preserve the rule of law in our nation and look after their own before they take in others. We also have to consider," he went on to say, "the millions of people who have immigrated here legally as well as those who are in the queue. It is incredibly unfair to them to grant amnesty to those who have jumped ahead of them in line illegally," end quote. Now, that's right on, right? But then, after the recent debate, he gave a speech at Liberty University, and a college reporter afterwards rather clumsily asked a question on immigration, and Carson clearly has stepped way back from this earlier position, or maybe I should say he has reverted all the way back to what seemed to be his original position. He said, quote, I propose that we give them a six-month period in which to register. If they don't register, they're criminals and treated as such. They're already criminals. Anyway, if they register in that six-month period and have a pristine record and they wish to be guest workers in this country, they would have to pay a back tax penalty and have to continue to pay taxes going forward. Well, everyone's telling us they're already paying taxes. Anyway, they would no longer have to live in the shadow. Now, where have we heard that jargon before? That does not give them the right to vote. It does not make them U.S. citizens. If they want to become U.S. citizens, they have to go through the same thing anybody else wants to become a citizen. Including leaving the country and apply from the outside unless the American people indicate they want a different course than that. End quote. Well, okay, Doc. Thank you for making my point about the need for you to steep a while in conservative hot water before you take on the big desk. I'm telling you, folks, it's a mistake to rest your hopes for a conservative presidency on someone who has only recently joined the club. Both Trump and Carson are in this category. So what's left? Rubio and Cruz. And look, Rubio is another one I would like to see get his conservative horse seated comfortably before he begins the rough and ready ride of the presidency. Besides, I'm not sure I trust that young man. You know, I brought this out about Rubio right from the first. He's wishy-washy. He has a disturbing leftward twitch that betrays a lack of confidence in standing on solid conservative ground. An article from conservative headquarters staff titled Marco Rubio's Cynical Ploy on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Quote, Marco Rubio has made a career out of talking a good game on the conservative agenda and then giving a charming puppy dog smile as he abandons that agenda and throws his support to anti-constitutional, anti-conservative policies. He did it in the Florida House when, as Speaker, he facilitated Jeb Bush's vast increase in spending. He did it as a member of the Gang of Eight when he threw in with Obama and Harry Reid on amnesty. And he's doing it once again as he distances himself from the TPP and pretends to mull the pros and cons of a bill that will destroy the quality of life for millions of American families. End quote. Now, why do you think he'll do any differently as president? Good night. Didn't we already once elect a guy without paying attention to what he was telling us and what he was doing? Anyway, I thought this quote I picked up from Club for Growth President David McIntosh summed up my take on the latest GOP debate. Quote, tonight's debate went a long way toward weeding out the pretenders in the GOP field. As the debate delved into tax reform specifics, real entitlement reform, and proposals for cutting federal spending by abolishing federal agencies, it became clear that Donald Trump and Dr. Ben Carson are in over their heads. Hear, hear. Their talking points don't measure up to the detailed plans backed by credible records put forth by Senators Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul. End quote. Now, I would edit that as they put forth by Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. Weeding. That's what I'm doing. Grabbing these candidates as close to the roots as I can. And twisting and then pulling and twisting and pulling them up by the roots. Weeding the garden. Trump, Carson, and Rubio. Weeds, baby. I'll pull up Rand Paul later. Hold on through the break, my friends. I'll be right back.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face with, to confront. The greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps it's been a while since you've experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Or perhaps you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015. And when you do, you'll know that God is real. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedaravia Road, Santa Maria. Pastor Scheidbach's series of messages, Encounter God, are delivered Sunday mornings at the Lighthouse. The Brain Massage Show ambassadors receive many special benefits, the greatest of which is the satisfaction of knowing they are part of a strong voice for truth and traditional American values. Bronze, silver, and gold ambassadors receive an audio CD of 4 Brain Massage shows each month. These are indexed so you can quickly navigate to the segment you want to hear again or show a friend. Silver and gold ambassadors also receive a copy of the transcript of the shows with supporting documentation. Gold ambassadors have the added privilege of being invited to join the Brain Masseurs Advisory Council. Interested? Call the Listener Response Hotline and ask about the Ambassador Program. An assistant will call you back to give you all the information you need. The number is 888-770-8000. That's 888-770-8000. Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique helps release the brain's natural thought antibodies that attack and destroy the virus called liberalism. If you are afflicted with this disease or have a friend or loved one suffering from this mental disorder, please stay tuned. This week's brain massage is about to begin. Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. It seems clear to me that among the many issues of concern to us in this election, the hot-button issues continue to be immigration and political correctness. Most recently, the debate is around how can anyone think that deporting 11 to 12 million people here illegally is a winning proposition. I mean, the logistics of it are often brought out as an objection. As in, you know, there's no way to do this in anything like a reasonable amount of time. And it would take decades to round up that many illegals and deport them. Well, you know what? First off, and this does need to be said, if we had been enforcing our laws all along, we would not be in this position. And all the politicians who refused to obey the law and enforce it ought to be held accountable. And in some measure, they are accountable. For all the criminal activity, including the rapes and the murders that we have had to endure at the hands of so many of these illegal migrants, I think one thing we can do that will get these hired politicians to do their job is to hold them accountable for the consequences that the American people have to put up with when they don't. If we have a law on the books, then these yahoos who take their oath of office ought to be held to account to enforce those laws. That's the job of the executive, is it not? If Obama can, for conscientious reasons, refuse to enforce our laws, how can he dare to object when we refuse to participate in his unlawful laws, like forcing us to participate in abortions and same-sex marriages for conscience sake? So one thing that would go a long way toward assuaging the anger we feel about this issue is if our government started enforcing the laws that are already on the books. This sanctuary city nonsense is a case in point. Now, these are cities that hide behind Obama, who defends their lawlessness and provides sanctuary for illegal criminals and refuse to deport them. Do you suppose San Francisco politicians are in some measure responsible for the murder of Kate Steinle? Remember Kate Steinle, killed by an illegal migrant in San Francisco while walking on Pier 14. Now get this. Quote, suspect Juan Francisco Sanchez, who has admitted he fired the fatal shot, is an illegal immigrant who had been deported 5 times before he was transferred from federal custody to a San Francisco jail earlier this year to face outstanding marijuana charges. Yet he was released in April after prosecutors dropped the pot counts, despite a federal request to detain him until immigration authorities could pick him up, end quote. So apparently in this case, the feds wanted to come pick this guy up, but this city decided, because of their sanctuary status, to release him. And the man they released went to Pier 14, found Kate Steinle walking alone, and shot her to death. Already deported 5 times. Are you getting sick and tired of this? I know that I am. So Kate's murder was directly related to San Francisco's sanctuary city policies. You know, I've heard that Santa Maria is a sanctuary city. I'm looking into it, and I haven't had time to pay the mayor a visit, but I understand from this report I received from a friend of the Brain Massage Show that Santa Maria is identified in this document as a de facto sanctuary city, a city that has not formally declared itself as such, but whose policies mirror those of declared sanctuary cities. Well, we'll see. I certainly hope not. So one of the problems with attempting to address this is the sheer logistics of it. But again, I think most Americans would be happy to at least see an honest effort at enforcing the laws we already have on the books, seal the border, and then proceed to weed out the illegals and take whatever time it takes. I can tell you that when the borders are sealed and aggressive deportations become standard practice, that's going to go a long way with the American people and with correcting this problem. But then, you see, there's the sentimental argument that it is inhumane to break up these families and all of that. My friend, every prisoner in jail right now was separated from his or her family, and we don't cry about it being inhumane because the lawbreaker is to blame for it, not those who are enforcing the laws. There are thousands of American kids whose dad or mom is in jail today, and no one is so foolish as to hold up their faces to the cameras and plead with the people to demand their parents be released on humanitarian grounds. That's absurd. No, they broke the law, and they are suffering the consequences of breaking the law. Otherwise, there is effectively no law at all, and we will finally come to be ruled by street gangs embroiled in the middle of their drug wars like our neighbors to the south. And this leads to the other argument that always comes up, the humanitarian angle of the problem. It seems unmerciful to some to arrest these mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, for the crime of violating our immigration laws and to force them back to their homeland and require them to get in line with everyone else and come here legally via a guest worker program or some other green card arrangement or to lawfully immigrate. You know, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound so inhumane now, does it? Because that's all we're talking about here. Saying, go back to Mexico and apply for legal access to this country. That's it. No one else is stopping them from taking their children with them. What is this nonsense about tearing families apart? If they refuse to pick up their belongings and their children and families and return to Mexico and then make legal application to return, lawfully, then if they get arrested, well, that's their bad. What a lousy father, what a lousy mother, what a lousy brother or sister, lousy law-breaking fathers and mothers, they will be arrested and deported. That's what happens when you violate the law. But there is this idea that it is simply an unjust law. Now, where's that coming from? Well, partly it is a sentimentalism that perverts justice and opens the door to evil. I'll address that in a moment. And partly, for the rhinos anyway, like Rubio, it's about currying favor with the La Raza, that means the race, for votes. But La Raza is a movement among Latinos that has no love for Rubio, let me tell you, or the GOP. They're committed to what is called Reconquista. I guess that's how you pronounce it. It's an agenda to reconquer the land of their forefathers. And that includes California, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, something called Aztlan or something like that. And the amnesty program that Rubio supported a while back, did you know it included a provision of $150 million to be funneled into pro-amnesty groups like La Raza, including La Raza? La Raza is a race-based organization promoting the idea that the race, the Mexican people, will rise and take back the lands lost to them in the American-Mexican wars. Interesting. The Catholic Church supports amnesty on humanitarian grounds, saying that it is a Christian's duty. And there are many Christians who fall for this, and many who do not identify with the Catholic Church that are inclined to become confused on this matter, thinking that it's mean to deport these lawbreakers. I've addressed this about 23 times in prior shows, so I'm going to summarize it here. First, it is a huge mistake to put mercy before justice. And it's an even greater mistake to encourage a sentimental kind of mercy that actually perverts justice. Many Christians fall prey to this. It's a general principle in the Bible that justice must be satisfied before mercy is extended. Did you know that? For example, the mercy seat was kept behind the veil with no access granted until justice was served. Mercy is precious to God, and God will not allow it to be sullied or soiled by sentimentality that perverts justice. To use mercy to pervert justice and judgment spoils mercy, makes it rotten. It actually turns mercy into the servant of evil and not of righteousness. It becomes the vehicle through which all sorts of evil will enter into our land and into our lives. As an example, consider how much evil enters into the world through evil men manipulating sentimental mercy on the part of liberals mostly to compromise judgment and justice. I mean, you see it everywhere in liberal culture. The manipulation of Christian sentiment in favor of mercy to pervert justice and judgment at the price of cheapening mercy and making it the servant of evil rather than of good. So what is the basis for mercy toward these who are crossing our borders illegally? Well, the basis would have to be to enforce the laws, but of course do it mercifully. The right response would be to look past the emotional appeals and see the issues of justice and judgment to be addressed here. Address those first. Satisfy those concerns. And then extend mercy in an appropriate way. Otherwise, if you, for example, grant blanket mercy by granting blanket amnesty, you will do great damage to justice and judgment, and evil will take full advantage of it, and it's already happening. Right now, evil is taking full advantage of a predisposition in this country among liberals to respond with sentimental mercy to this situation and other situations that end up compromising judgment and justice. And all this does is encourage evil to take advantage of their sentimentality and listen. That's what killed Kate. In the end, it does not serve the children. It only serves the emotional pride of the liberal. The children are the ones most hurt by this sort of mercy. Indeed, my friends, mercy without justice and judgment to protect it is a veritable door for evil to flow strong into the world and ravage the innocent. This sort of mercy always ends up hurting the innocent and helping the wicked. And recently, it killed Kate Steinle. What is the proper Christian response to the border crisis? What does the Bible say is our responsibility to strangers? The word strangers is used in the Bible to speak of outsiders, people who come among us that are not part of us. According to the Bible, a stranger is to be regarded with respect, and we are to be hospitable. In fact, we are warned to be careful how we entertain strangers. They could be angels. The Sodomites at Sodom and Gomorrah discovered this a little late, Hebrews 13:2. God reminded the Jews that they were once strangers in a strange land and should therefore remember not to oppress strangers. Exodus 22:21, thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. And then 23:9, also thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Furthermore, we are strictly commanded to extend to strangers the protection of our laws and the courtesies of our customs. Oh yeah, Leviticus 24:22, ye shall have one manner of law, as well for the stranger as for one of your own country, for I am the Lord your God. That's important. And then our customs. For example, the rule to set aside a portion of your fields, say your income, to minister to the poor is specifically to include the poor among the strangers in the land. Leviticus 23:22, and when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them to the poor and to the stranger. I am the Lord your God. However, this applies both ways. In other words, the strangers were obliged to keep the laws, including Sabbath laws and other ordinances of Israel. Read through Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and you'll see it over and over again. The restrictions against eating blood, for example, were to be applied not only to the nationals, but also to the strangers. Leviticus 17:10, and whatsoever man there be of the house of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn among you, that eateth any manner of blood, I will even set my face against that soul that eateth blood, and I will cut him off, and so on. Exodus 20, verse 10, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, and others, and then nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. And then Exodus 12:48, and when a stranger shall sojourn with thee and will keep the Passover to the Lord, notice this, let all his males be circumcised, and let him come near and keep it, and he shall be as one that is born in the land. For no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. And Numbers 18:7, therefore thou and thy sons with thee shall keep your priest's office for everything of the altar and within the veil, and ye shall serve. I have given your priest's office unto you as a service of gift. Now listen, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. My point here is that strangers were not to come into the land and overturn the customs of the people. They were to come and have respect for their laws and respect for the customs of the people. In fact, they were expected to adapt themselves to the customs of the land. So the point here is that if a stranger comes here illegally, that is, not according to our laws, well, then they are lawbreakers. And since we are to apply the laws equally, then the laws regarding entering our borders must be applied equally also. In other words, what the amnesty crowd is doing is applying the laws unequally in favor of strangers who broke our laws, when they would certainly not extend the same leniency to our own citizens. Equal justice, equal mercy. Oh my, I'm out of time. I hope you enjoyed your brain massage today, but I've got to sign off. I have lit the lamps in the Church of Belfry Arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. It is a free call to anyone within the continental United States, from outside the country, or for those who prefer it. You can email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And you'll see there a place where you can write me an email. If you're in a hurry when you call, just say lights on or lights off and then hang up. But if you will, please leave a message for me on our listener response hotline, or write me an email. Let me know what you think about the show, or ask any questions you might have. Either way, give me a call or give me an email. But God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Are you ready for a renewed experience of God with a fresh encounter this year? Or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. Get ready to encounter God and know that He is real.